Reading from the Jiva Dharma, Chapter 9, Pramaya Abhideya Tattva. Omigana Timurandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Taksur Mulatam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Mano Bhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Sayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Sapadantikam Vanshakalpa Tarubhyascha Kripa Shindu Bhayebhaja Patitanam Bhavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Nama Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Sivasade Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Okay, I'm at the Raval's house in Newburgh where I used to stay. I haven't been here in years. And it's a joint family. And they have the full program, and they're having a rip-roaring kirtan, amplified. So I'll have to, you probably can't hear it, maybe you can, but I will try to give the class. I've always had challenges. It's also a Nirjal Ekadasi. I'm following Ekadasi. Also, I didn't realize it, but I also had planned this day where I get my yearly checkup. So they took quite a bit of blood from me also. So I may sound a little bit less. But we're on chapter 19, and we're up to Abhideya Tattva. And it's funny how you need quiet to hear what's inside your head. So I'll have to be super focused. But we're discussing Abhideya Tattva now. It says Pramaya. There's Pramana and there's Pramaya. Pramaya is what is to be known. Pramana is how to know it. And there's three things to be known, which is sambandha, basically metaphysical knowledge, what exists, and the valid means of knowing that it's true. And Abhideya Tattva is the means to realize it. I've just explained this many times, and Piyojana is the goal, or is the experience of realizing reality. And our experience of realizing reality is we have love for it because we have a natural relationship. But now we'll begin Abhideya, and I think it's going to be the most interesting part of the Jiva Dharma, because in this story now, and I realized this when I was writing Waves of Devotion, that Bhaktivinoda Thakur is genius in this dialogue of people coming to Krishna consciousness after Lord Chaitanya. The whole gamut of the philosophy of Krishna consciousness being described. Like, up until now, we've seen different people come to Krishna consciousness, and according to their identity, whether they're a Mayavadi or a materialist, a different tattva is required to enlighten them, and in that regard, systematically, we've heard all the various tattvas of sambandha or metaphysics in Krishna consciousness. And now, we're going to hear about Abhideya. But the thing that's so interesting about Abhideya is basically what Bhaktivinoda Thakur does is in the dialogue, because, you know, there's many, many people until we came to Vrajanath, and now Vrajanath, his uncle is, he's going to find out his uncle is also a Vaishnava. And it's going to be about them deepening and coming to Krishna consciousness. And when they learn Abhideya Tatva, basically what we're going to hear is Bhaktivinoda Thakur's summary. Actually, the rest of the book is going to be Bhaktivinoda Thakur's summary of Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu and Ujjvala Nilamani, which will cover the complete Abhideya and Priyojana Tatva. So I think it'll be some of the tattva that we discussed was very, very difficult to understand. So what we're going to do is, because it's the story, right now we're in the story of Rajanath and his enlightenment by his guru, which is Raghunath Das Babaji. And he's not Babaji himself, but he lives at home. So we kind of get the story of him at home and then going to Raghunath Das Babaji and then getting enlightened. And generally, the story at home is just like a narrative. And then when it gets to his guru, it becomes more like a dialogue. So bear with me. I think it'll be interesting, though. So, and remember, the last subject that was discussed is Achintya Beta Beta Tatva. Our understanding, or it is our understanding, because we're in this line of our understanding, or the Gaudiya Vaishnava's understanding of God's relationship to this material world. And ours is simultaneously one and different, in the sense that there's God, and there's God's energies, and the material world is one of God's energies. And even though it expands from God, God remains the same. The example is given of a touchstone. It touches something, it has Shakti, but it doesn't lose its Shakti by doing something. Something also becomes transformed into gold. Or the sun, not losing potency, or it doesn't appear to lose potency. So the two doctrines were Parinambad and Vibhartavad, I think. There's transformation. Anyway, one is that because God can't change, the emanations from it must be illusion. And the other one is God has inconceivable potencies. So even though energy emanates from him, it's not illusion. It's a transformation. It's a transformation of his energies, and not a transformation of himself. And because God has inconceivable potencies, energy emanating from him does not have to make him less. And that's the first verse of the Sriyasha Upanishads. Om Purnamada Purnamidam Purnapurnamidachate Purnasyapurname. That even though the person of God is perfect and complete, even though so many units emanate from him, he remains a complete balance. And that's a reasonable conception. That's a reasonable conception of the That's a reasonable conception of the absolute truth. That it's a reasonable conception of the absolute truth that that God has inconceivable purposes, and to posit that because God has energies, it would indicate a change in God, and therefore it must be an illusion, because God must be eternal or changeless, is to make the fallacy that God has to operate under his laws in the material world, the laws of cause and effect, which say that when something comes from something, it changes. So it's not a reasonable proposition. When you're talking about God, you're talking about a being which determination will is an absolute fact. A being which does not have any laws dictating his existence. His will dictates his existence. And in that will, he can expand in so many ways and still remain complete. And so after taking his meal, Vrijanath retired to bed with various conflicting views about the Chintya Veda, the doctrine of inconceivable one's indifference arising in his heart. Sometimes he thought that a Chintya Veda touch was just another kind of Mayavadi philosophy. But when he considered that there was no objection, he realized that there was no objection in the Shastra to it. On the contrary, it contained the essence of all the Shastras. So, anyway, it's sincere. He's heard something. He has faith, you see, and therefore he's considering it. But it takes some struggle and understanding. But his guru presented how it was Shastra, and he has faith in Shastra. So now he's just trying to figure out how it's true. And when you deal with the ultimate reality, which is beyond the laws and causes of cause and effect, it's hard to just wrap your brain intellectually around it. The full realization of it will come from our realization of it. So he starts to think to himself, Srimad Gorky Shore is the complete manifestation of Bhagavan himself, and his profound teachings cannot possibly be faulty in any way, he said. I will never give up the lotus feet of that extremely kind and affectionate Gorky Shore. But alas, what have I attained so far? I've come to understand that a Chintya Beta Beta Tattva is the ultimate truth. What I've gained through this knowledge. Sri Raghunath Das Babaji has said that priti, love, is the sadhya of life for all jivas. So what's happening now is he's saying, okay, I know the reality, I know the goal, but what have I gained? There's still the goal, and I understand the reality. But what have I gained? I haven't gained the goal yet. And that's why it's very interesting that although Piyojana is the goal, it's often discussed as it is in the Chatur Shloki before Abhideya. Because any practice has to have a goal. So first you understand reality, then you understand the goal. And then you become inspired. How do I realize that goal? But practice is based on a goal. So it's very interesting here that the Priyojana, the goal, was introduced somehow or other in the last chapter. Raghunath Das Babaji has said that priti, love, is the sadhya of life for all jivas. Karmis and Gyanis are also searching for love, but they're ignorant about Shuddha priti. That is why I must reach the stage of unadulterated love. But my only concern is how may I achieve it. I will inquire from Babaji Maharaj about this subject and adopt his principles. Thinking like this, Vrijanath fell asleep. So he said, yes, the goal is love. It's so obvious that the goal is love. But people don't know that there's a shuddha priti or pure love. And how do I achieve it? So this is going to lead to Abhideya Tattva, his thinking. So how do I achieve that love? Since Vrijanath went to sleep quite late, awoke late the next morning. The sun had already risen when he rose from bed, and he had hardly finished his morning ablutions when his maternal uncle, Vijay Kumar Bhattacharya Mahasai, arrived from Sri Motudhuma. That's one of the nine islands of Navadvip. Vajranath was very pleased to see his uncle after so many days. He offered him dandavat pranam and respectfully offered him a seat. Vijay Kumar was a great scholar and orator of Srimad Bhagavatam, and he would travel considerable distances to give Bhagavatam discourses. By the mercy of Sri Narayan, he had developed staunch faith in his heart in Sri Gauranga Mahaprabhu. Some days previously, he had the good fortune of obtaining darshan of Sri Vrindavan Das Thakur in the village of Dainuta. So, such an interesting story. Now, his uncle and him are going to start going to Raghunath Das Babaji together and be enlightened. So, Vrajanath and Vijay Kumar. And he finds out, him and his uncle didn't know that he's a Vaishnava. He doesn't know that his uncle is a Vaishnava. Or maybe he knew his uncle, but his uncle didn't know that he's a Vaishnava. And his uncle is telling him that he had darshan of Vrindavan Das Thakur, who is the biographer of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and was a disciple of Nityananda. But because he was much younger, even though it's a generation after, he's probably one of the last remaining people left from that generation because he was the son of Srivas Thakur's sister, I believe. I have to check that. Vrindavan Das Thakur had ordered him to visit the inconceivable yoga pit of Sridhar Mayapur where Sri Chachinandana Gohari's Achintya Leela eternally takes place. He also informed him that soon most of the holy places of Sriman Mahaprabhu's pastimes would disappear and reappear after 400 years. So we know that Bhakti Vinod Thakur rediscovered the yoga pit. So he's putting this in the drama that Vrindavan Das Thakur is saying, he's telling Vijay Kumar, the uncle of Vrajanath, you must go see the yoga pit. It's going to disappear. He said that the places of Sri Gaur's pastimes were essentially non-different from Sri Vrindavan, the holy place of Krishna's Leela, that only those who can perceive the transcendental nature of Sri Mayapur can truly have darshan of Sri Vrindavan. Hearing these words of Sri Vrindavan Das Thakur, the incarnation of Sri Vyasadeva, Vijay Kumar became very eager to take darshan of Sridhar Mayapur and decided to go there after visiting his sister and nephew in Bilva Pushkarini. So I guess that's where they live. So Vijay Kumar saying, I just come back to visit you and now I'm going to go there. These days, the villages of Bilva Pushkarini and Brahma Pushkarini are somewhat distant from each other, but in those days, they were immediately adjacent, and the boundary of Bilva Pushkarini was within a mile of Sridhar Mayapur Yoga Pit. The old village of Bilva Pushkarini is abandoned these days and is known by the name of Tota and Taranbash. When uncle and nephew had exchanged pleasantries, Vijay Kumar said, "Tell grandmother that I am going to take darshan to Sridhar Mayapur, and I will be back soon and take my afternoon meal here." "Uncle, why do you want to visit Mayapur?" asked Vrajanath. Vijay Kumar was at the time unaware of Vrajanath's present condition. He had only heard that Vrajanath had given up his study of Nyaya Shastra, was now studying Vedanta Sutra. So he didn't know he became a Vaishnava. He just knew that he was in the school of Nyaya and now is in the school of Vedanta, which is the school where, in the six philosophies, it's the school, the school of scriptural analysis where Gaudiya Vaishnavism lies. So he didn't know that, so he did not consider it appropriate to describe his devotional sentiments to him. Instead, he hit his real motive and said, I have to meet someone in Mayapur. Vrajanath was aware that his uncle was not only a great scholar of Srimad Bhagavatam, but also a devotee of Sri Gaur. So he guessed that he must have some spiritual purpose in visiting Sridham Mayapur. Uncle, he said, a very faithful and elevated Vaishnava called Sri Raghunath Das Babaji resides in Mayapur. You must have discussion with him. So then Vrajanath says, why don't you visit this great saint? So then Vijay Kumar then suspects, why is he telling this unless he is having some faith in Vaishnavism? Encouraged by Vrajanath's words, Vijay Kumar said, are you developing faith in the Vaishnavas these days? I heard that you've given up the study of Nyaya Shastra and studying Vedanta, but now I see that you're entering into the path of bhakti, so I need not hide anything from you. The fact is that Sri Vrindavan Das Thakur Mahasai has ordered me to have darshan of Sri Yogapit at Sri Mayapur, so I've decided to take bath in the waters of Sri Ganga Devi, and then circumambulate and take darshan of Sri Yogapit. Then at Srivasangam, I shall roll into my heart's content in the dust of the Vaishnava's lotus feet. So now Vijay Kumar is going to reveal his mind that I'm just, because the Dham is a spiritual place, and if you go there in the right mood, you see it as the spiritual place, and it's the most profound feeling one can get. I just feel it's such inconceivable mercy that I've been able to live in the Dham for most of 40 years. It's just inconceivable mercy. Wow. Vrajanath said, Uncle, please take me along with you. Let me meet my mother and then leave for Mayapur. Deciding thus, they informed Vrajanath's mother and left for Mayapur. First they took bath in the Ganga, and Vijay Kumar explained, aha, today my life has become successful. At this thought, Sri Satchinanda Gohari bestowed unlimited mercy upon Janavi Devi by performing his water pastimes for 24 years. For 24 years. I really can't. 24 years, water pastimes, Janavi Devi, that's Nityananda's consort. So I don't really understand that. While bathing in these waters today, I'm feeling Paramananda. That I can understand. He's feeling unlimited bliss. When you're receptive to spiritual phenomena, they enter and touch your soul in a way that's inconceivable. When Vrajanath heard Vijay Kumar speak these words in an inspired mood, he spoke with a melted heart, Uncle, today I am also blessed by your mercy. After Ganga Snan, they visited Mahaprabhu's birthplace at the home of Jagannath Mishra. There, by the mercy of Sridham, by the mercy of the Dham, they become completely immersed in a mood of deep spiritual love, and their bodies became drenched with tears. Vijay Kumar said, if one takes birth in this land of Gaura but does not visit this Maha Yoga Pit, one's life is useless. I always try to visit the Yoga Pit. The last time I didn't, but hearing this, I'm definitely going to make it a not to miss it. because I go to Mayapur every year. Just see how this holy place seems to material eyes to appear as an ordinary piece of land covered by straw huts. But by Gauranga's mercy, see what beauty and opulence is visible to us. Look, how high and splendid are these bejeweled mansions. How inviting are these lovely gardens. How attractive to the eyes of the place of worship. Look here, Sri Gauranga and Vishnu Priya are standing inside the house. What an enchanting form. What an enchanting form. So they're advanced and they're having a spiritual vision. We know that we go to the Dham and we as we chant and practice, that there's a higher and higher revelation of the beauty of the place. I'm just remembering the beauty of going around Govardhan. As he said this, they both fell down and lost consciousness. After quite some time, they recovered with the help of some other devotees and entered Srivasangam, tears flowing from their eyes, and they rolled on the ground exclaiming, Ah, Shiva, Ah, Advaita, Ah, Nityananda, Ah, Gadadha, Gauranga, please give us your mercy, free us from the false pride, and give us the shelter of your lotus feet. It's a spiritual experience makes one humble, because being in contact with the infinite helps us to understand our finite or limited or humble nature. That should be the result of spiritual practice. And as one feels humble, the more one feels humble, the more one feels the mercy of spiritual practice. All the Vaishnavas there became very joyful when they saw such emotions in the two Brahmins. They began to dance and chanting loudly, Mayapur Chandra ki jai, Ajita Gauranga ki jai, Sri Nityananda Prabhu ki jai. Rajanath immediately offered his body at the lotus feet of his worshipable spiritual master, Sri Raghunath Das Babaji Maharaj. The elderly Babaji picked him up and embraced him, asking, Baba, what brings you here at this time today? And who is this respectable Mahajan with you? Rajanath humbly told him everything, and the Vaishnavas seated them with utmost respect. Vijay Kumar then inquired submissively from Srimad Raghunath Das Babaji, Prabhu, by what means can the ultimate aim, Priyojana, for all jivas be achieved? Please be merciful and tell us how we can attain that Priyojana. So this is the beginning of the many chapters that describe Abhideya Tattva, or the means. Babaji, you are Shuddha Bhaktas and everything is within your grasp. Still, since you have mercifully asked, I will explain whatever little I know. Krishna Bhakti, which is free from any trace of jnana and karma, is the ultimate aim or the Piyojana for all jivas and is also the means of attainment. During the stage of spiritual practice, sadhana of astha, it is called sadhana bhakti, and the liberated stage, siddha avastha, the stage, it is called devotional service perfected in prema bhakti. So, what is the means? It's to practice bhakti, to please Krishna without any other desires, which are basically two, the desire for jnana, which is for yourself, a type of liberation, a freedom from distress for yourself, and karma, material enjoyment. So Bijay, what is the intrinsic characteristics, the Sarup Lakshmana of bhakti? By the order of Sriman Mahaprabhu, Rupa Goswami is described The intrinsic characteristics of bhakti in Sri Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu as follows. Anya bilashita shunyam jnana karma janabritam anukuyena krishnanu shilanam bhakti uttama. Uttama bhakti, pure devotional service, is the cultivation of activities that are meant exclusively for the benefit of Sri Krishna. In other words, the uninterrupted flow of service to Sri Krishna, performed through all endeavors of body, mind, and speech, and through expression of various spiritual sentiments. So this is the Sarup Lakshman. What is pure devotional service? It is activities, body, mind, and words, which is meant exclusively for the benefit of Krishna. You're doing things exclusively for the pleasure of Krishna and not mixed for any other reason. It's a difficult platform to perform because even within devotional service, many of the things we do with a personal motive. But the means and the goal is just for the pleasure of Krishna. To simply endeavor to please Krishna. And then the tattvalakshanam, the secondary characteristics, it is not covered by jnana, knowledge of nirvishesh brahm, aimed at personal liberation, and karma, reward-seeking activity, yoga or austerities. It is completely free from all other desires other than the aspiration to bring happiness to Krishna. So the basic definition is to please Krishna, and the tattva or refining that definition, it's free from any other desires. The Shastra very clearly describes both the Sarup Lakshanam, the intrinsic characteristics, and the Tattva Lakshanam, the extrinsic symptoms of bhakti. The word Uttama Bhakti refers to pure devotional service. Devotional service mixed with fruit of activity, karma, mishra bhakti. Devotional service mixed with speculative knowledge, jnana, mishra bhakti, are not pure devotional service. The aim of devotional service mixed with fruit of activity, karma, mishra bhakti, is sense gratification. And the aim of devotional service mixed with speculative knowledge, jnana, mishra bhakti, is liberation. Only such devotional service free from any trace of desire for fruitive results or liberation is Uttama Bhakti of pure devotional service. The fruit of bhakti is prema. The Sarup Lakshman of bhakti is endeavors favorable for Krishna, Krishna Nu Shilana, performed with body, mind, and speech, and a loving attitude of mind. Such endeavors, chaste, and spiritual sentiments, bhava, are both favorable, anukulya, and constantly dynamic. By the mercy of Krishna and his bhaktas, when the special function of the internal energy of Bhagavan manifests upon the jiva's own spiritual strength, then the true form, sarup of bhakti, takes place. In the present state, the jiva's body, mind, and speech are all materially afflicted. When the jiva directs them by his own discrimination, the result is only dry speculation and renunciation, and the true nature of bhakti does not manifest through them. So, in the present state, we're materially afflicted. And when we direct, by our own discrimination, our activities, the true manifestation of bhakti is not manifest. What's going to say is the true manifestation of bhakti happens when Krishna's, by that surrender, by that service, you're being directed by Krishna's internal potency. Not any speculative mind, but a deep sense of your identity with Krishna. However, when Krishna's Sarup Shakti becomes active in the jiva's body and mind, the nature of pure bhakti immediately becomes manifest. The ultimate aim of all spiritual activities is Sri Krishna. And that is why real devotional activity must be favorable towards Krishna. Endeavors performed for realization of Brahma, Paramatma, are not accepted as pure bhakti. Rather, they're aspects of speculative knowledge, gyan, and fruitive activities, karma, respectively. There are two types of endeavors, those which are favorable and those that are not unfavorable. Only favorable activities are considered to be devotional service. And favorable activities means the activities which please Krishna. The word anukulyena means the tendency to be favorably disposed towards Krishna. So anukulyena Krishnanu. Anukulyena means the attitude, which means the favorably disposed towards Krishna, wanting Krishna's pleasure. This tendency has some connection with the material world during the period of devotional practice, sadhana kala. But in the liberated stage, siddha kala, it is utterly pure, free from any connection with the material world. The characteristics of bhakti are the same in both these stages. Therefore, the intrinsic characteristics of bhakti are endeavors for the cultivation of Krishna consciousness performed with favorable sentiments. While we are discussing the intrinsic characteristics of bhakti, it is also necessary to describe its extrinsic characteristics. Rupa Goswami explained that there are two tattvastha lakshmi. The first is having no other desires, and the second is freedom from the coverings of karma and jnana and other such endeavors. Any ambition other than the desire for progress in bhakti goes against bhakti, comes in the category of other desires. Jnana, karma, yoga, and renunciates are said to be antagonists to bhakti when they are strong enough to cover their heart. Therefore, pure bhakti may be described as the cultivation of activities that are favorably disposed to Krishna and free from the above antagonistic characteristics. So that was the definition. This is a beautiful summary. And what are the various distinct characteristics of bhakti? Swamiji in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Srila Goswami has described the following six special characteristics of bhakti. So these are the symptoms of pure devotional service. Klesha Agni, Shubhada, Moksha Lugu Takrit, Sadulava, Sandandana Vishesh Atma, Sri Krishna Karshani Chita. Klesha Agni destroys all kinds of distress. Shubhada, she awards all kinds of fortune. Moksha Lugu Takrit, she makes the pleasure of impersonal liberation appear luguta, insignificant. Chulava, she is rarely achieved. Sandrandana, visheshatma, her nature is imbued with the most intense and superlative pleasure. Sri Krishna, akarshani, she is the sole means to attract Sri Krishna. How does bhakti destroy distress? Babaji, there are three kinds of klesha distresses. Sin itself, papa, sin in its seed form, papa bija, and ignorance of vidya. Sinful activity is classified as pataka, sinful, maha pataka, very sinful, and atipaka, extremely sinful. All these are considered papa. So there are three kinds of klesha. Papa, so now it describes the different types of papa, then this bija, the seed, and a vidya, ignorance. the ignorance, the wrong conception. Then the seed is that desire. And then Papa is when it, Papa, sin itself is when it's manifest and you act upon it. People in whose heart Shuddha Bhakti is manifest are naturally not inclined to become involved in sinful activities, Papa. Desire to commit sins, which is called Papa Bija, cannot remain in a heart filled with bhakti. Avidya means ignorance of one's spiritual identity. When Shuddha Bhakti first dawns within the heart, the jiva understands very clearly, I am a servant of Krishna, and ignorance disappears altogether. So when you have pure devotional service, you have a change of identity, and that identity of servant is antithetical to the desire to enjoy and control. When you actually have that identity and you embrace that identity, it changes your vision. You don't look at the world as yours for service. You look at the world as Krishna's for his service. But when you ignorance of one's spiritual identity, when Shuddha Bhakti first dawns within the heart, the jiva understands very clearly, I am a servant of Krishna. And ignorance disappears altogether. This means that as Bhakti Devi, the goddess of Bhakti, spreads her effulgence, the darkness of Papa, Bija, and Avidya are dispelled from the heart. On the auspicial arrival of Bhakti, all sorts of distress go away. This is why Bhakti is Klesh Agni. So I'm going to stop now. So if anybody would like to ask any questions or say hello. Anybody like to say hello? Did I press the button in the right way?
Jai Maharaj, it's Rati Krishna.
Okay, so at least you're there. Anybody else like to say hello today?
Hi, Krishna Maharaj, this is Gail.
Hi, Bogail.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Anybody else? Okay, then we're going to end for today. It's kind of a long day. Bunch of couple Jewish.